south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, first, a little housekeeping here. You know, when you guys out there download this show, there's a lot of places you can get it, but one of the more common places is podbean.com. Or off the PRN.live site, or Progressive Radio Network, iTunes, or Stitcher. Some of those places, when you click on the streaming or download link, it'll take you right to podbean.com. And you'll see a list of all my shows, 1,160 of them, something like that. Anyway, as the Brits say, there's been a little bit of a cock-up in the last couple weeks. The main mother station I'm connected with, PRN.live, L-I-V-E, out of New York, have been updating and switching to new software. And in the process, they shuffled around some of my shows in the last month or month and a half so that they didn't come out in order. In other words, the latest show you see posted there just might not be the latest show. It might have been two or three shows ago. And the one from two or three shows ago shows up out of sequence. Could be the latest show. Confused yet? So anyway, I've been getting emails from people saying, Johnny, your latest show is not your latest show. It's one from a week or so ago. So here's what you do if you don't want to miss any of my latest shows. Just check the dates on the last five or six shows, wherever you download them, iTunes, Podbean, whatever. Just check the dates, because I know in the last few weeks or so, some of them have been posted out of order. Though as of this week, everything should be lining up sequentially again. From now on, that is. At least I think so. So if you're interested in not missing a single show, do check that out. However, if you don't give a shit, what can I say? By the way, I got into kind of an interesting but disgusting, what they call asco here in Spanish. The full word is asqueroso. By the way, you should know this. If someone happens to say in Spanish, que asco, that means how disgusting. Que asco. So anyway, on a disgusting but kind of useful topic, the other day, a couple of friends of mine were talking about cockroaches, you know, the scourge of Latin America. Well, any place, actually. Though I have to admit, when I lived in Chicago so many decades ago, I never saw a cockroach in the house, ever. Of course, you know, having a fastidiously organized German mom helps. Though, I had plenty of friends in apartments and such who'd see him once in a while, but the farther north you get, the less likely. In fact, I remember the very first time I was sort of disgusted by the sight of cockroaches when I first visited a friend in my jammy, when I was about 22 years old. That was when I first saw cockroaches in really big numbers. I was staying at my buddy's beach house, an upper-middle-class family, and I remember getting up at 2 or 3 in the morning to catch a snack in the fridge, and I flicked on the kitchen light. And I saw six or seven of them on the floor and the wall, and I just freaked out. No snack that night. It was an instant appetite suppressor. The next day, when I brought it up to my buddy, he said, so what? No big deal. Everyone has cockroaches. You can't get rid of them. No matter how clean you are, they come around. Even if you have a full-time maid like this guy's family had, you just can't get rid of them, he said. All you can hope to do is keep the population way down. And that takes constant doses of insecticide. Even now in 2022, when I walk into a middle-class or upper-middle-class Latin American household, I often detect the lingering smell of that stuff in the background. And man, I'm telling you, they have some insecticides here that would never be legal in the first world. You and I know that stuff's really nasty for your health, but Latin Americans, well, they're not big on science and research. I know. Some of you are thinking, what an ass you are, Johnny. So what do you want me to do? Lie to you? Tell you Latin Americans are obsessed with science and biology? That they're a culture of nerds and deep thinkers? Fact is, average Americans aren't much better. Just saying. Now, of course, the warmer and more humid the climate, the more cucarachas and insects in general. The fact is, if you're just a bit careful, you can rid your house of those things completely. And for people who say it's just a fact of life, they're here and you gotta deal with them. Well, I say so, you're just not trying hard enough or doing the right things. It's not so hard, you just have to stay focused. Maintain certain standards. Number one, never ever leave dishes or anything at all in your sink overnight, because at nighttime is when they come out to play. Number two, never leave food out overnight either. And I know so many Latino families, you walk into their kitchen and they leave bowls and pots of rice and stuff on the counter all night. Cookies, bread, and pastries too. They're begging for trouble. That's the last thing you want to do. Now, as far as leaving whole fruits and vegetables on the counter overnight, in a bowl, whatever, that's fine. Cucarachas don't go after those things. Unless you've cut into them or sectioned them, like a banana, papaya, mango. then you're taking a big chance. But as long as they've got their intact skin on them, no problem. So bottom line, for all you guys and gals out there who claim you just can't get rid of those cucarachas, you're at constant war with them. I beg to differ. The fact is, I don't see two or even three cucarachas in a whole year in my house or apartment. However, when I'm at other people's houses or walking around outside, I see them all the time, especially at night. They're nocturnal little bastards. But in my place or my places that I've lived, they're almost non-existent because I don't break those hygiene rules. Oh, and you always want to take out your garbage regularly, too, and never let it overflow. Oh, and here's another thing that Latinos almost never do, and one of the big reasons why they have cucarachas. You know, most people have a little plastic garbage bucket in every bathroom and bedroom, right? I was always taught as a young kid, you line those things with a plastic grocery store bag, and you just throw that away every week. Well, guess what? It doesn't seem Latino moms have ever taught their kids that. So all the garbage, trash, leftovers, etc., go directly into the plastic bucket, and you know what kind of mess that makes. Worse yet, most all Latino houses I walk into where the main garbage bucket is in the kitchen or whatever, it doesn't even have a top on it. That means flies are hanging around there all the time too. Man, you have to have a top on your garbage buckets. Now, if you go to a hardware store and buy a garbage bucket, there are various kinds with and without tops, and some of the tops have a hinge on them. Those are the best ones. Now, you'll have to spend an extra $5 or $6 to get one with a deluxe top on it with a good solid hinge. It's incredibly worth it. Saves a ton of pest problems later. But you rarely see those things in people's houses. I know it seems like so simple and obvious stuff, but it ain't so obvious down here. I guess it's just that kids copy whatever they saw in their parents' houses. And so if you end up coexisting with flies and cucarachas, well, if it was good enough for mom and pop, that's life. That's the way it is. They're used to it. Those are some of the little things you notice if you're down here long enough. Some of the little things, certain details, third world people will tolerate, we just never would. Well, most of us anyway, I hope. Then again, many years ago, back in Chicago, when I was playing in some of my early rock bands, I had some musician friends you could loosely refer to as white trash or trailer trash, though I don't think we knew the term back then or it even existed. Kids are sort of blind to that kind of stuff. The fact is, I didn't know I grew up lower middle class till I was in my 20s and I ran into a rich kid I went to high school with who kindly informed me of that fact. Later, I asked my mom if that was true. She said, yeah, I guess so. Back then, in the Gilligan's Island and Leave It to Beaver years, it didn't matter much. A lot of my friends grew up lower middle class and set the world on fire later. We didn't know we were lower middle class. We never made that distinction. We only knew our parents didn't make enough dough to give us an allowance. That's why we all went out and got paper routes at 12 years old. The difference was my mom was a tough German, so our house was spick and span. Books everywhere, because she was a professor, but spick and span. Spick and span. Can you still say that? Haven't heard any blowback on it. Maybe the wokester word Nazis haven't got that far in the dictionary yet. Anyway, my friends, when they walked into my house, even though there were 6 kids and 2 adults, 8 people in a 3-bedroom little cookie-cutter cracker box house, my friends always commented how nicely organized and clean, especially the bathrooms, my parents' house appeared to be. And most of my buddies, when they got older and got real jobs and settled down, they graduated from white trash into the middle and some even the upper middle classes and really straightened their acts out. They just needed a good example here and there. And back then, with so many of our parents coming from the so-called greatest generation, there were plenty of good examples and role models to go around. Unlike today. But I digress, man, did I digress. Sorry about that. Anyway, every single house and apartment I rented in Latin America did have its share of cucarachas, at least initially, but within 2 or 3 weeks, I got rid of every last one of them. Sometimes in the first couple days, you have to nail them with insecticide sprays and such because they're just so disgusting. And fast and tricky, man, for such prehistoric, unsophisticated creatures, man, can they run. So anyway, as Latin American life would have it, as soon as I move into an apartment or a house, I usually end up killing a lot of them the first couple days by swatting them or bombing them with insecticides. And then I mix up a batch of what I call my famous cuca death balls. It's great stuff because it's natural and non-toxic to humans and animals. By the way, in some Latin countries, the word cuca is slang for cucaracha, of course, and vagina. So look out when you're using that word in mixed company or you might get some dirty looks, especially from the older ladies. Though, as usual, you will have the gringo advantage going for you, so that they might just laugh it off and chalk it up to you being a clueless gringo. Or not. Depends. So anyway, after a couple of days in any new place, I'll mix up a batch of my cuca balls. Here's the recipe. Borax powder, flour, brown sugar, and water. You start with borax powder. It's a fine white powder. You can get it on Amazon or in a full-service hardware store in the welding area. Welders use it as a flux. It's called Borax, B-O-R-A-X, or boric acid. Anyway, it's half borax and half regular flour, about a teaspoon of each, then a nice big pinch of brown sugar. Then you mix it up in a little bowl with your fingers. It doesn't matter. It won't hurt you. With just a little water. Then you knead it, K-N-E-A-D it, to the consistency of Play-Doh. Then you roll it into tiny little balls, each about half the size of the nail on your pinky finger. You should be able to get about 20 little balls with a mix like that. Then you go around the kitchen and put them in areas the cucarachas like to use as nighttime runways. They like to run along the space where the floor meets the wall. They also like to run along the line where the kitchen countertop meets the wall. So you start spreading those little kooka balls around. At the very corners where the wall meets the floor, the corners where your kitchen countertop and the walls meet, and in your kitchen cabinets where you've got cans or boxes or bags of food stored, deep in the back corners there too. And most importantly, in the corners in the cabinets under your kitchen sink. You do the same thing in your bathrooms too. Don't forget behind the toilet, in the back where the wall meets the floor. And if you've got a pretty big kitchen, if you put a kooka ball where the wall meets the floor about every 5 or 6 feet, you should be fine. Now, over the years, I've found you don't have to put kooka balls in any place but your bathrooms and your kitchen. That is, unless you like to eat in bed. Then you might place a few kooka balls in the corners near the walls and floor under your bed. And within 2 or 3 weeks, you won't have any more at all. By the way, if you're concerned about how ugly those little balls look around your house, don't fret. Because, you know, a person might just say, "What the hell is that little ball doing over there?" Well, in reality, they're barely noticeable, and you can hide them behind things. For example, behind your toaster, microwave oven, espresso machine, and the ones in the kitchen and bathroom cabinets. You never see those. Anyway, not to worry, even if they're out in the open. They're very tiny, tan, and blend right in. So then how long do they last? How long are they effective? They last a long, long time. 3 to 6 months, easily. Eventually, the kooka balls get very hard, like little rocks. Just like Play-Doh will do eventually. Remember that stuff, Play-Doh? Bet you tried to eat it when you were a kid. Really salty, huh? Anyway, no matter how hard your kooka balls get, the cucarachas will still try to nibble until they get way too hard. The thing is, you really don't have to change them out until you spot one or two of those disgusting things around the house again. The thing is to remember those simple rules. No dishes in the sink, open plates of food on the counter all night, etc., etc. As for me, I'll change those kooka balls out about every 6 months, and I have almost no kookas to speak of. So then how do those kooka balls work? Well, they've got a little brown sugar in them, so at night the kookas will nibble at them. And that borax, or boric acid it's called, it damages their digestive system and dries out their exoskeletons. Now, the thing is you're not gonna one day wake up and see a bunch of dead cucarachas everywhere. Seems like they eat the stuff, get sick, crawl back into the drains or Biden's brain, wherever they come from. They don't just all of a sudden keel over. By the way, the reason I'm bringing this up, the other day I was sitting with a bunch of people, a couple gringos too, and they were talking about their cucaracha problem. Actually, they weren't really concerned about getting rid of them. They reluctantly came to the conclusion they just have to live with them. I told them it didn't have to be that way, that I had no cucarachas in my house, and they didn't seem to believe me. So I explained all of what I just mentioned to you. And still, they gave me that, yeah, right, look. Oh, and another thing, this is kind of funny. One of the guys, a gringo, said to me, "Isn't it odd? Sometimes I'll wake up in the morning, go into the bathroom or kitchen, and I'll see a dead cucaracha on the floor, flipped over on his back." The dead ones, he says, are always flipped over on their backs. "How's that possible?" he said. "It's a mystery. Every single dead cucaracha I haven't swatted myself are upside down on their backs. That's the way they die." Then I said, "You use tons of insecticide, right?" He said, "Damn right, I'm at constant war with those things." He said, "The little cucarachas aren't so aggravating, but those ginormous ones, they're disgusting. They give me the willies." He says, "I go through a can of spray every couple of weeks." Meanwhile, I'm thinking, please don't invite me over to dinner, okay? Not just for the cucarachas, but for that cloud of insecticide settling on everything and that you're constantly breathing the stuff too. Then I mentioned, cucarachas that die by insecticide always end up on their backs. I know it sounds crazy, but it's true. The neurotoxic chemicals that end up in their nervous system cause them to lose control of their muscles, and they spaz up violently, flip over, and die. And when they end up on their back, because of their very high center of gravity, they can't flip themselves over again because the insecticide toxin won't let them coordinate their leg muscles anymore. In fact, many times it seems the cockroach is dead, but it's really not. It's just paralyzed, and it'll lie there until it starves, dehydrates, or sometimes, after an hour or so, revive, flip right side up, and live to torment you another day. So never assume they're dead when they're laying on their backs. As disgusting as it sounds, you should whack them. And they do make a sound, a popping sound. Make sure you squish them good. Yuck. Same goes for those really big cucarachas, otherwise known as politicians. Anyway, cucarachas of all kinds, including politicians, when they die a natural death, they generally crawl back to their sewer or Nancy Pelosi's house. So keep that in mind. If you're out and about anywhere, a restaurant, a home, whatever, and you see a cucaracha flipped on its back, the owner has been heavily dousing the place with insecticide. Not good for humans or pets. Oh, and one more thing about those kookaballs. They don't seem to bother pets. I've had dogs and kookaballs. They don't like them. They don't eat them. I guess they're too bitter, so they just ignore them. Now, I suppose you're thinking about now, that's way too much information about kookas. Well, not if you want to get rid of them completely. I hate the things myself. I can never get used to them. And when I'm at someone's house and I see one, it puts me on alert. It kicks in the gag reflex, if you know what I mean. Just like when I'm in the presence of a politician. It's understandable. They're dirty, sneaky, disgusting, and have nine lives, too. Enough said about that. Way too much said about that. All right, let's take an email. This is from Kent. He says, "Hey, Johnny, it's been a couple of years since we last talked. I'm still a fan of Bocas del Toro Panama, even though I know you're not. Anyway, last July, I bought a small island there with intent to build on it this year. However, as often occurs, life throws unexpected changes at you. Instead of moving south of the border, I had to temporarily move north to take care of family issues. Johnny, since the island I bought isn't titled, but is ROP, means right of property. There's two different ways you can have property in Panama, with a title or ROP. He says, since I can't be there to make sure some locals don't claim possession of it, as well as watch my contractors and their workers so they don't cut corners on the construction or steal the supplies, I have decided it's best to sell the land. All right, me, Johnny, here. Let me explain something. If you've got a title to a property in Panama, it's registered with the municipality and all that, and no one can squat on it and steal it. But if your land does not have a title and it's owned by right of property, ROP, you or someone you know has to be on that property or someone could squat on it and steal it. Anyway, Kent says, since I can't be there to make sure locals don't claim possession, etc., I've decided it's best to sell the land. It's listed at 2.5 times of what I paid for it less than a year ago, and wouldn't you know it's in a bidding war over my asking price right now. It's painful to watch it go, but the extra money sure helps comfort that pain. I'll be back there in the future, I think, though. Just keeping you posted. Thanks again, Johnny. Signed, Kent." All right, Kent, thanks for that. You know, it brings up an interesting point, this right of property thing they've got in Panama. That came about because there's lots of indigenous tribes that if they went and tried to get title for their islands and lands, whatever, it'd be virtually impossible. They just don't have the money to send out surveyors and all that. Besides, if you get a title to land in Panama, you got to pay property taxes. However, if you've got a document that says it's ROP, right of property, you pay no property taxes, no matter how much it might be worth. Could be worth millions. And still, by law, you pay no property tax. But then again, there are some downsides. You can never use it for collateral on a loan. And if you're not there, someone could always squat on it and claim possession. That's why it's called right of property. Who's ever on that land for a certain particular time, whatever the government says is legal, has the right to that property. It also can deter quite a few first world people from wanting to buy a place like that because we're used to buying places that have a clear title. For gringos and expats, it can be scary to buy a place that doesn't have a traditional title. But in this case, Kent's case, seems like he's got buyers lined up. So for him and his island, it doesn't seem to be an issue. Anyway, Kent, good for you. Either you're really smart, really lucky, or both. Wow, Kent, to get 2.5 times more than what you paid for the place less than a year ago, you know what? I'm jealous. Anyway, one of the reasons I read Kent's email is to point out the fact that the legalities of buying, selling, and owning land in Latin America can be quite different than what you're used to up in the States. All right, moving on. You know, I've mentioned a few times in the show, I've got lots of haters out there. People trying to cancel me, calling me every name in the book because I speak the truth. Not their particular abridged version of the truth. Yeah, right. Like there's more than one version of the truth, like 2 + 2 = white supremacy. But even though people are trying to cancel me, say nasty things about me, even make fake websites and fake news up about me, it only seems to be a small percentage of listeners, yet they keep listening. Meanwhile, for every piece of hate mail, I get 50 emails like this one. This is from Mr. JC. He says, "Hi, Johnny. Peace and bendiciones to you. It's 11 years later, essentially to the day we finally arrived in Guatemala. A deep and heartfelt thank you for everything you've done for me and my family. There is no question that if it wasn't for you, I would be grinding it out in a failed police state in frustration, oblivious to the possibilities of living a life in a culture that is full of joy and with freedoms not available in the U.S. He says, a while back after Fukushima, I told my wife that we have to get closer to the equator based on the jet stream movements and global atmospheric wind patterns coming out of Fukushima, as not to be downwind if and when the reactor cores melt down and blow up. At that time, the Main Street media had downplayed it, failing to mention that the reactors had blown already, which they had, literally sky high. At the time, he says, I was following Michael Rupert, the peak oil guy, and found you and Richard Martin on PRN. By June 2011, I was in Guatemala attending your seminar. Johnny, he says, you have changed people's lives. You have helped people that you will probably never meet. You've given people hope and a chance for freedom. For so many, you've painted a picture of a world full of possibilities. Every time my wife and I listen to your weekly podcast, we feel the joy of someone who is living the life to the fullest. You're very inspiring and lots of fun. Just a little feedback for you, Johnny. Don't change a thing. Especially the love you throw at the woke people. Call it how you see it, as always. Insights and insults. Stories and observations. Keep it coming. Then he says, by the way, Johnny, we're wanting to visit that stem cell clinic in the DR you talk about. Just to get a touch-up. Finally, he says, Johnny, I trust you're taking advantage of the recent crypto and Bitcoin buying opportunities. Anyhow, looking forward to catching up with you. With sincere gratitude signed, JC and family. All right, Mr. JC, thanks for the kudos. Anyway, I'll mention once again, I get many, many emails like that interdispersed with some haters. You know what they say, you get the most flack when you're right over the target, right? Now, don't think I read that just to toot my own horn. I read it on the show to touch on something I forgot to mention a while back regarding the seminar. Remember, Mr. JC said he wanted to stop in at that stem cell clinic in the DR I've been talking about. Here's what I forgot to mention. You know, I'm setting up another Expat Insider seminar in the Dominican Republic this time for late October, early November. What I forgot to mention is that I've been getting inquiries from people asking, Johnny, if I come down to the seminar, can I go to that stem cell clinic at the same time and kill two birds with one stone? Yep, you can do that. All you have to do when you come down to the seminar is add another week on to your flight plan. And then right after the seminar is done, we'll have one of the ladies from the stem cell clinic set up the necessary appointments starting the following Monday. Now, since the seminar finishes on a Thursday night, you'll have the weekend to relax, and the following Monday, you'll be off and running. So if that's how you want to schedule it, kill two birds with one stone, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and our seminar coordinator and logistics lady, Rita, will start the ball rolling. So whether you're just planning on the seminar or the seminar and getting stem cells, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll put you on the early bird discount waiting list. You'll be the first to get the seminar sign-up info, plus the itinerary and all the complete details. All of that should be ready in a week or less, so stay tuned. All right, let's take another email. This one's from John. Lots of Johns and Dave's out there. He says, hey, Johnny, a while back you spoke about several mail forwarding and package forwarding services in Florida that can provide customers an address to receive mail in Florida who would then forward them to a Latin American country. Then he says, could you please provide me the name of any such companies you have used and have found to be reliable? Aside from that, he says, I've listened to your podcast off and on for several years now, always informative and spot on about the habits and behaviors of Latinos and Latinas. I personally got out of Dodge myself back in 2020 and have been living in Colombia with my Colombian wife until now. However, looks like Colombia is poised to go the way of Venezuela once the new socialist president takes office. So my wife and I are considering moving to Mexico or possibly Guatemala. Unfortunately, he says, seems like we expats are running out of places to flee to escape woke idiots and thieving politicians. Then he signs off, keep up the good work, Johnny. Signed, John. All right, thanks for that, John. And you know, I agree with you. It is a shame about Colombia. Problem is, those sociopathic politicians know how to get votes. They just promise freebies to everyone. Hey, who doesn't want something for nothing? I want something for nothing. Problem is, nothing's for nothing. And politicians lie. It's a prerequisite for the job. I like Colombia. It's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Although at one time I was thinking if I had to move to Colombia, I'd go to Medellin around the Poblado area. I liked it a lot way back when, 10 or 15 years ago. But now it's first world expensive. The Colombian government is desperate, broken bankrupt like every other government. The socialists are taking over. They're promising freebies, and they've proposed a wealth tax and a huge tax on the rich. The sweaty masses just love that kind of talk, you know. And the businessmen and the rich, they're not fools. They're on the books, and they know they're easy to tap for taxes. When they hear that kind of talk, they don't invest anymore. They spend the next couple of years getting their dough the hell out of the country. But, you know, politics is like a toilet. The biggest, smelliest chunks always float to the top. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, John asks about those Miami mail and package forwarding services. He asks, which ones have I used and liked? Well, here's the thing, John. Those mail forwarding services where you have an address right in Miami, you use your name and their address, so that packages from eBay, Amazon, Walmart, Target, or even your own mother will, usually within a week or two, end up at your own doorstep in whatever Latin country you're in. Well, turns out, unfortunately, sort of, those mail forwarding services are individual to a particular Latin country. For example, I've used three different mail forwarding services that go from Miami to Guatemala. One's called Rapidito Express, one called Miami Box GT, and one called ICC Logistics. And the reason why I don't stick with one is because, well, one will work for a while, a year or two, and then suddenly they'll drop the ball, things will come later and later, or they'll jack up their prices, or some new and better competitor will come along with a much better deal. In Guatemala alone, there must be 30 Miami mail forwarding services you can choose from. Some as low as $2 a pound to $8 or $10 a pound. And really, why should you pay $6, $7, $8, $10 a pound when other services are offering $2 or $3 a pound? You might as well try them out. It doesn't cost you anything or any membership or monthly fee to sign up with them. In fact, a lot of times when you're talking to gringos and expats, they'll say, how's your courier service? How fast is the stuff arriving and what do you pay a pound? And someone will tell you about some terrific new service. And you're thinking, man, I got to try that one. Save me a ton of money. And since there are no contracts involved, it's not like you're married to a particular mail forwarding service. Oh, and another thing you have to know. Suppose you're living in Colombia and you move to Panama, Salvador, Guatemala, whatever. You're almost guaranteed that mail forwarding service to Colombia won't send it to Panama, Salvador, Guatemala. They seem to be specific to one particular Latin country. In other words, there's no sort of universal Miami mailbox service that'll send your packages to whatever country you happen to be in Latin America. Maybe there is, though, but I haven't found one yet. If there is, though, sooner or later I'll hear about it and let you know.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.